room where Jim waited for me. My visit was at the request of a family member, and Jim wanted me to know right from the moment that I walked into the room that he was definitely not a Christian. He declared, "I'm an agnostic, so don't expect me to believe anything you say about God." I thought to myself, that's quite a way to introduce yourself. Let's jump right into the deep end. Then I tried to figure out how to meaningfully engage with Jim. The pastor writes, "In conversations like this, I've found two vital practices for engaging people with the gospel. One, asking focused questions of people. Two, maintaining an inner dialogue with God throughout our conversations." When Jesus encountered people, whether current or prospective disciples, he usually engaged them in conversation by asking focused questions. We often remember Jesus' question of the closest disciples at a pivotal moment in his ministry. Matthew 16, "What about you? Who do you say that I am?" But Jesus made this a regular practice to engage people through questions. Matthew 6, "Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life?" Matthew 9, "Which is easier to say, your sins are forgiven, or to say, get up and walk?" Matthew 20, "What do you want me to do for you?" Questions generate disequilibrium as people engage with familiar or unfamiliar issues from different angles or through uncertainty. Questions open opportunities for people to creatively share deep things with one another. Questions nurture a sense of relationship and community as we huddle inside the intimate atmosphere of searching and suggesting. The pastor, "When Jim opened with his surprising introduction mentioned above, I simply asked question after question to get to know Jim better. I asked questions like, tell me, what do you mean by that? Or, how'd you develop that idea? Or, what's happening with you right now?" At key moments, I would ask more probing questions related to the gospel, such as, "Is it possible that what you think about when you hear the word God is shaped more by your experience rather than reality?" Or, "Have you ever considered really reading one of the gospel accounts in the New Testament in search of truth?" Some of those questions opened deeper conversations. Some led down what felt like rabbit trails, and others seemed to close doors. Yet focused questions often become the stepping stones down the pathway of gospel engagement with others. One of our main difficulties in these situations is that we often do not know where to take a conversation or how to remain authentic as a conversation partner and not a gospel manipulator. This leads me to the second vital practice, which is maintaining an inner dialogue with God as we talk to others. At one point, Jesus described his ministry as primarily responsive. He said this in John 5, "Truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees his Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son also does." Jesus maintained a prayerful dialogue with his Father that shaped the way he spoke and the things he did as Messiah. Obviously, we are not Jesus, but his example shows us one of the most important practices for meaningful gospel engagement with others. We too must maintain that inner conversation with God as we talk with others. We won't know what to do. And John, I don't think I would ever recommend yelling after a couple again. Oh. Okay, good. I wasn't yelling. I would not recommend yelling in a public place, because that's all people will remember, not even what the guy said. Yeah. We don't always know what to do, but we turn to our living God and loving Father who knows every person in every way. Although others may not perceive it, we must continually return to our Father to submit to him both our desired ends in the conversation and our approach to presenting the gospel to others. So the pastor said, throughout my conversation with Jim, I returned again and again to an inner conversation with the Father. I asked things such as, Lord, what are you doing here? Or, Father, what would you have me say in response to that? Or, Lord, I lay down my desires to take this in a different direction. What do you want? What's your direction here? As we keep this inner dialogue with God, it allows us to be intentional about gospel engagement while also relieving us of the tendency to manipulate conversations towards some end. If I could just get them there. Our dialogue with God guides and guards us into true gospel engagement with others. In this situation, our conversation with God could guide us into focused questions that sustain a fruitful chat about the deep things in Jim's life or whoever's life. Jim didn't pray a prayer with this pastor to become a follower of Jesus at the end of our conversation, but that in itself was not his goal. Instead, the pastor said he was able to take one step along the pathway of relationship between two human beings and also relationship with the living God who's hidden yet always present to us and others. Now, this story by Matthew Erickson is told by a pastor who was invited by others into a hospital room. So it's not the same as us working a stall at a street fair. But some of what he says will really help us as we talk today about the art of conversation, specifically related to our work at the Lane Cove or Cammeraygal Festival in just a fortnight's time. Now, we call it the art of conversation. I like that title, by the way, because it's an art, not a science. I was a high school mathematics teacher. I taught biology. There's a right answer. There's a wrong answer. Conversation, there is no right answer. Just ask my wife. I never get it right. But the this carefully edited cassette. I know she's listening wherever she is. We know it well, Darren. This art of conversation is something that we have to practice. We have to give it a go because you just don't know how it's supposed to work. So you try, you bungle, and then you say, oh, that one was good. Write it down as soon as you can. And if you're going in pairs, I mean, obviously John and I were together at that one place or you were nearby. Why you invited me to come and do this was that you've overheard me in conversation. This is not my first rodeo. I've been doing this for a long time. I got saved in 1971, and immediately, because Jesus was coming back that afternoon, I went out and told people Jesus was coming back that afternoon, and you better repent, you better get saved. And I was, and hopefully still haven't lost much of that fervor. I'm still keen. Every time the clouds, the whole drive from Gosford today, I saw the clouds and I thought, this could be one that rolls back like a scroll and Jesus could put his foot down. Come on. Live in that hope. All right. So I've been doing this chatting with people about the gospel for a little while. And so I've developed my own style. You'll develop your own style. Don't develop mine. It won't work. Remember, King Saul gave David Saul's armor to put on to go fight against Goliath. The first thing David did was take off that shield and take off that armor. It didn't fit. So you've got to use your personality, your style, your words to converse with people in your way. That said, you still can and should listen and learn from everyone. Oh, that sounded good. Oh, I should have tried that. Just write it down if you have to. Write it down, record it somehow in your head. I want to do that next time when I encounter someone who talks to me like this. Okay. It's an art. This is a scarf I don't really need it today because it's cold, but it is grand final time. And if I wear this today, here, nobody's going to say boo to me, generally. However, if I'm down in Geelong tomorrow and I walk around in a swan scarf, I'm going to actually prevent people from hearing me. Does that make sense? They will say, get away from me with that. So if I want that person to hear me, I have to adjust my clothing. I have to adjust other things. I can't just be who I am and everybody will get it. I have to adjust my clothing, my language, my whatever, so that they listen. The whole point of conversation is conversation. That is, that we move them a certain direction and they even move us a little, that we have a two-way dialogue. Had a teaching last week at one of the Bible colleges, C3 or Hillsong, one of them, I forget. And one of the students asked me a question immediately after I had said, you know, in a conversation, if someone says this and you say, yes, but, you're really saying no. Yes, but means no. Isn't that right? Well, yes, but, okay, so that means no. All right. So one of the students asked me a question not 5 minutes later about witnessing, and should I be intentional about witnessing, or shouldn't I just let the Holy Spirit lead? I said, well, those aren't mutually exclusive. By intentionality, in our case, going out to the festival, or knocking on your neighbor's door, or taking a flyer for Simply Christianity, or carols in the car park, or wherever we're going to have it this year, that is intentional. So when you do that, you're hoping to raise an issue. So the girl said, should I be intentional or can I just let the Holy Spirit lead? I said, well, of course you let the Holy Spirit lead. At the same time, there's nothing wrong with intending to knock on your neighbor's doors, etc. So then she queried, well, then what if she, my friend, who's Jewish, she tells me, asks me, are you trying to convert me? Because, you see, I'm really not trying to convert her. I just want her to follow, as you say, Yeshua. So I don't want her to quit being a Jew. I said, well, you and I understand what that means. She doesn't. So for her vocabulary, yes, you're trying to convert her. She said, yes, but I said, no, that means no. You can't do that. And the whole class got it instantly. Yes, but means no. So just listen for that. If you're trying to have a chat with someone and you're always saying yes, but, you're not really saying yes. You're a naysayer at that moment. So be careful. When someone says, are you trying to convert me? Your answer is yes. I'd like you to quit being a sinner and start following God. That's so harsh. Yep. That's what you're trying. You don't want them to convert from Methodist to Anglican to Baptist to who cares. That's just, you know, getting wet somewhere else. That doesn't do anything. But yes, you'd like them to convert. Use their vocabulary. In other words, get the scarf off. Use their vocabulary the way they understand religion. I mean, sometimes they say, wait a minute, are you trying to make me more religious? And you know that that's a trick word for you. Your word, no, we're not into religion, we're into relationship. How many times in your life have you used that mantra? Well, that's great in-house. It doesn't communicate a thing to Mrs. Anderson out there. In fact, she's going to think, what the heck does that mean? Really, yes, I want you to be more religious. I'd like you to come to church with me. See, I knew you just wanted that so that you can hear about freedom from religion. What? So this is what's called cognitive dissonance, where you take a word that they use, step on the platform they give you, and then make it dissonant, make it a noise that conflicts. I get this all the time as a Jew for Jesus. That's serious cognitive dissonance for most Jewish people. Wait a minute, he's on the wrong team. We're us and they're them. Jesus is on, he's wearing the Geelong Cats scarf. He's the other guys. So here's another one, the law of apperception. The law of apperception, A double P, so maybe it's apperception, is this. You take what they know and lead them to what they don't know. So if you say, if they say, what church are you from? And you're not really keen on LCM being anything that they need to come to, you just want them saved. Well, you're going to confuse them if you say, oh, that doesn't matter, because you're standing at the LCM stall. So don't do that. Start with what they know. Yes, yeah, I'm from LCM Church, and we'd love for you to come along. Here's a flyer. Here's a thing. We're just around the corner. You know where the bakery is. You know where the post office is. We're right there. So you start with what they know rather than, oh, that doesn't matter where you go to church, because now you've just dismissed yourself as having relevance for them. Start with agreement of where they are, where you are, and then take it further. Here's a theological phrase. I think it was Jim Engel who first coined the term the Engels scale. Jim was on the CMJ board in the U.S. for a very short time with me back in the 80s. Jim was a teacher in Philadelphia, I think, at a Bible college. He came up with the Engels scale. Here's what it is. People are on a scale of spirituality from, it used to be -7 to +7. I think over years it's grown to -9 to +9, as he finds more people who don't fit those categories, so he stretches it. That's all right. I was a maths teacher. Numbers don't bother me. So -9, that's the person who, like Jim in the story, I don't want to hear about God. I don't want to know anything about God. -8, well, maybe I'll listen to you talk, but don't try to convert me. -7, all right, maybe there's something to this God stuff for some people, but not for me or my family. -6, maybe I'll read the Bible myself. -5, you get the idea. There's a progression towards, and he's Anglican, so you get saved at -2, baptized at 0. God bless the U.S. Episcopalian. So -2, he prays a prayer. 0, he gets water baptized. 1, he joins the local church. 2, he goes to a Bible study. 3, he starts reading the Bible on his own. You get the idea, progression. Number 9, he moves 10,000 miles away and starts Jews for Jesus in Sydney, Australia. Well, you get, there's a package deal to this. Now, I tell you all about the Engels scale so you can get excited when someone goes from -9 to -8. Today, they don't like the Pastor Matthew said. He wasn't keen to get the guy saved. He wasn't sure that he wanted him to pray the prayer and become a follower of Jesus right then. He just wanted him to move it up a notch. That's what we're going to try to do out there at the fair or anywhere we're working with our next door neighbor. You have to listen to be able to know where they are on that scale, and then let's move them up one notch. Now, what does that mean, one notch? You don't know exactly what that means. Have they ever been to a Bible study, prayer group, church, carols in the park, anything? Have they been to? Who knows? How do you know? You ask questions. So the pastor's right about asking pointed, real, non-rhetorical, non-leading questions. If you run into Mrs. Goldberg, you don't say, Mrs. Goldberg, have you read Isaiah 53 lately? I mean, that may be a good question later on, but it's not your opening salvo. It's so out of bounds. It's so not there. Unless you're Philip, the evangelist, and you're dealing with an Ethiopian eunuch, and most of us aren't, then I recommend you don't jump right at, do you know what you're reading in Isaiah 53? I'd recommend you leave that to maybe next week. Just start a little slower than that. Find out where they are in their life of spirituality. Most people will happily tell you about spirituality. I sat in the Adelaide Stamford Plaza a fortnight ago. One of the football teams had just won over, the Crows had just won over somebody. And there was great festivity there at the Stamford in the city. I was in the pub downstairs because I hate paying for Wi-Fi at an expensive hotel. Think, what is wrong with you people? The Comfort Inn gives it to me for free. Why can't? So I'm down in the pub, which is free. The drunks can get it, but I can't. Anyway, so I went down, and I'm using it, and I got up to get a drink, and I came back to my spot, and there was Mick Molloy sitting in my little four-chair table. Hi, Mick. How are you? Drunk as a skunk. Delightful 25-minute conversation with him. By himself, he and I, that's it. It was remarkable. What do you do for crust? And I said, well, I'm a missionary. Work with Jews for Jesus. Hey, I'm spiritual, he says. I used to be religious. Now I'm spiritual. Boom, just right out. Here it comes. I didn't realize that I was on duty, but I was, and that's okay. And I became Pastor Bob or Missionary Bob to Mick. Very happy to talk about his life and his emptiness. Very happy to talk about what's missing in his life. But it's cool. It's cool what you got. It's cool. It's not for me, but it's cool. And so I asked him some pointed questions like, how do you know it's not for you? On what do you base that it's not for you? Why do you dismiss religion so? Oh, you were raised Catholic. I see. And so you heard some stuff and it was jammed into, yes. And so I led him a little bit, but then I just gave him talking questions, a question that I don't know the answer to, what I call sympathetic questions. Fill me in. What would it take for God to get hold of you, for you to become, in your term, religious? Well, I don't know, he said. Don't have any idea. So that got him not only to the point of admitting I don't know, but to ponder it later when he sobered up. We've tweeted each other since then, and we'll see. That was just a fortnight ago. I never know what's going to happen. Let me show you. Here's some things I want that influence my thinking on street conversation techniques. When I go out, and maybe for you, I want to engage with people. I mean, we're not just going out there to kind of be there. I want to engage with people. I want to have a serious chat. Might be one person, might be 20 in that first hour. I don't want to give God the parameters. I just want to engage with people. If that includes dogs, I'll do that too. Number two, I want people to have something with them later which will continue the conversation. So the show bag. So these things I just grabbed out of my car, and I'll give you lots more things that we can use at the fair. All the World's a Stage. This is one of our gospel tracts that we use. I've got oodles of them that I think will be worthwhile that I'll bring to the parish, and you can use or not use. It's okay. Issues magazine is deeper. I've got oodles of these. I don't even know what an oodle is, but I've got oodles of these of various editions that have testimonies or stories. That'll be very useful. This one is just one of the many issues reprints. This one is the New Testament Jewish. I've got others on Jewishness and the Trinity, Holocaust, questions real Jews really ask that might be useful if you run into Jewish people. And listen, if you answer questions Jewish people are asking, a lot of Gentiles ask Jewish questions in this day and age, that's for sure. Number one question people ask, Where's God when there's suffering? Five people shot in a mall outside Seattle, Washington. Where's God? Every 82 hours this year, a terrorist attack has taken place since January 1. That's not even 4 days before another one happens. Lahore, Pakistan, Nice, France. Every day, it seems. So I think that kind of question is huge, and maybe we need some flyer that's sensitive and kind and yet explains the purpose of suffering that we can include in our pack or have on the table available for Mrs. Goldberg or Dr. Anderson or Mrs. Chen, who really does raise that question. You say, you know, let me do this. I want you to have a couple things. They're right here in the show bag. It's a pencil. It's a bouncy ball. It's a flyer advertising, you know, whatever we're advertising this year. But I want you to have this too. I think this will be something you'll particularly like later on. Show it, drop it in the bag, hand her the bag. She has to take it from you. You've made it especially personal. Okay? So I want people to have something with them. Are we going to give out Gospels of Luke again? We might still have some. The Essential Jesus. That's always a winner. You're bored with it, but they're not. They've never seen it. And I think I have a Bible somewhere. No, that's at my cousin's place in Tea Gardens. They don't have a Bible. I used to. Maybe my cousin, they don't have it. So let's get them a Bible portion of some kind. Number three, I want the person's information in my hand so that I can initiate follow-up later. So this is a card that every Jew for Jesus missionary always keeps with them. Yes, I folded it. Yes, it was in my back pocket. It's a little sweaty. This is a contact card. I always have one with me because I never know if I'm at the Kohl's or Woolies or I'm just at the Kohl's Express where I just stopped, and somebody might not turn and say, Jews for Jesus, what an interesting idea on my Jubaru out there. They might ask, and I will immediately. Whoops. Here we go. I have my pen. I will immediately pull out these two items. I will always have a pen. I will always have a piece of paper with a form on it, because people won't necessarily give you their data. You know, you pull out your phone and say, here, what's your Facebook? You know, James, you might do that, but these other old people, they're scared. They're not going to do that. not all old. Sorry. Apologies. You know, you might pull that out and say, you're not even, no. Do you use Facebook much? Oh, a lot. Okay. Well, I do too. Yeah? Yeah. So some will use that, but others will say, look, I don't want to be your friend on Facebook. That's a little too intimidating. But what's fascinating to me is how people will fill out a form. Hey, you know, that's a great question, Mrs. O'Malley. I'd really like to answer this idea about suffering. And, you know, it's the fair, it's fun, and you're asking a real question. I'd like to, if you'll give me permission, I'd like to answer that question. I'm not a theologian. You have to say you are. But they can say, I'm not a theologian. I'm just a Joe Ordinary like you, or a Joanne Ordinary like you. But I've got some things that I've been working on, and maybe you and I can process this together. Tell you what, Sylvia, give me your, what's your surname? And you just write down Sylvia, and it's amazing. I would say 80% of the time, you keep asking, they'll give you the data. Name, address, you're here in Lane Cove? Yeah, Lane Cove, 2066. Skip right to mobile. What's your mobile phone? I mean, there's office, there's home, there's email. Skip to whatever you're comfortable with, but definitely get something so that you can keep chatting with her. And then, of course, you better be faithful. Send info on suffering. And you better do that same week, because if you don't, you're just another one of those religionists that promises the moon and delivers nothing. That said, I want to get their data for further follow-up. I want to add them to the church database. I want to add them to my sphere of influence. I want to be able to share with them. Number four, I want them to think well of the ministry of the church. So that's why I say I hope I didn't yell at the lady. Because I want them long range to think well of Lane Cove Mowbray Anglican Church and of Jesus and his church altogether. What that means is I'm going to try my darndest to be a believer in front of people. I'm going to try to represent him with the fruit of the Spirit. And I, putting myself out there, and you putting yourself out there at the fair or anywhere, you're going to get tested on this particularly. You get tested by somebody saying, you religionists, you all think, what do you think, I'm going to hell if I don't accept your Christ? And they get a little loud. And they're just annoyed because they've already run into the C3 stall and the St. Michael's stall. And you're number three, another religion. People out here just hawking their God at me. I'm so fed up with you people. Get out of here with your face paint and balloons. And you have to represent Jesus. Unbeknownst to you, you're the third Jesus freak that that person has encountered or rather been harassed by today. You didn't think you were a harassment at all. You are. So what do? Don't apologize for being out there. Because then if you're going to apologize, just walk away. If you're sorry that you're out there, get away. You're not sorry that you're out there. I'm so sorry that things have been rough for you. Can I pray for you today? I don't want to hear about prayer. Okay, it's fine. Just tell me your first name. My name, my name's Melissa. Sure. Okay, so just tell me your first name. It's Jose. Okay, fine. Thanks, Jose. Hope you have a great day. I'm going to go over here and say a couple prayers for you. Is that okay? All right, great. And if they ever say yes to any subject of prayer, say, okay, and great, one more thing, Jose. What would you like me to pray for you? See, they'll often knock back our prophetic ministry of preaching the word, but they will almost never knock back our priestly ministry of praying the word. And it's a fascinating thing to watch how desperately desirous of prayer people are. Joe, ordinary people wouldn't mind somebody saying a prayer to whatever deity there is. So don't be afraid to ask that. If they demonstrate any kind of, they're walking, they've got three dogs and four children, and they're walking. It's really crowded. It's crazy out there, isn't it? And we're trying to, step over the children and the dogs. And you say something and they indicate, oh, it's been such a stressful day. That's your clue right then. Mrs. Cohen, can I say a prayer for you? Oh, please. That would be great. Mrs. Cohen, what exactly, just step over here for a second. Move them physically. Don't move them with your hands, generally. But get them towards the inside of the booth. That takes them away from two things, the noise of and the visibility of the people walking by, so they can be a little more private. And secondly, it gets them in your sphere so that maybe one other person, you're there, you've got the show bag, you're trying, Mrs. Cohen, come pray. And then David's over here and you say, come here. And David, would you join us in prayer? I'm going to pray for Mrs. Cohen. One more thing, Mrs. Cohen. What is it today you'd like us to pray for? Well, my cousin surgery and broke and in the sand and noisy and the streptococcus and whatever. I don't know. And so you say, David, can you pray? Don't ask others to pray. You've had the relationship now with Mrs. Cohen, so you pray. Don't touch her. Just stand right next to her. I know a lot of people are very comfortable hands-on praying. It's good. I'm very comfortable with that. Feel free to pray over me anytime, on me, whatever. Don't do that with Mrs. Cohen. She's not into this. So give her space, not too much. Give her space. Pray for Mrs. Cohen. David stands in agreement. You and David can hold hands and say a prayer and make it short but pointed. And then David says the amen. And Mrs. Cohen, thanks so much. Can I please, would you allow me the opportunity to send you a note and see how things are going? Can I get your details? Just tell me what's your phone number. Just go for one of the details, and then she'll fill in all the rest 80% of the time. Number five, I want to have a good time in my time out on the street or at the stall. These are some of the... Excuse me. Some of the things I want that influence my thinking. So let me remind you what they were. I want to engage with people. Number two, I want people to have something with them when they leave. Number three, I want to have that person's info. Number four, I want them to think well of the ministry or the church. Number five, I want to have a good time in my time out. I really do. I don't see why I should go out. No, it's terrible. I hate this job. And number six, I want every person to move one step further along the Engels scale. Here are some pre-street work requirements. I only have three. Number one, pray. Yes, that means say a prayer. It also means be in prayer. So we are a fortnight away. We better start praying if we have. You've already started praying. Lord, we need people. We need, you know, balloonists, and we need stuff. Have we gotten the stuff in yet? We have. Most of it's in. So we need, can I say stuffers? Is that okay? Anyway, consolidators. Pardon me. I am bilingual. You'd think I'd get it. Number two, gather the resources. That's pre-street work. So we have to gather scripture portions, Bible answers, maybe some philosophical things from Tim Keller, a chapter from his Reason for God book. Maybe we want any number of things. Flyers to invite to a meeting, a pen, forms for sign up. So we should have something like that you can create. Other fun items for the bag. Well, I don't have to tell you that. And number three, I recommend wearing an identifying badge or shirt. Oh, we use shirts. Yeah, we use the shirts. Now, that does two things. It is both for rejection and for esprit de corps. It's for rejection. Yeah, if somebody doesn't want to get a show bag from Lane Cove Mowbray Anglican Church, better that we tell them who we are, because, you know, we sprawl into the plaza, or whatever it's called, the street. We sprawl. We're there. They've given us the 8x8, and we make it 16x8. And we're out there. Hi, don't forget. Oh, look out for the dog. Here you go. Have a show bag. Be out of yourself. Get out of yourself. Get onto the street. It's okay. There are no rules. Well, no, we shouldn't. Yes, we should. That's how you do it. You get out of yourself, you go hand it out. And if they see, what color's our shirt, green? If they see our green shirt and immediately say, oh, those Anglicans, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. They're like Hillsong. So if you do that, then immediately it's okay. They say no. Let them say no. We're honest about who we are. It's okay. And it's also a good for esprit de corps. That we're kind of doing this thing together. Think colors of a gang. So let's add these few things, and then I'll listen to any more questions you might have. Initiating chat. How do you initiate a chat? Blurt. Blurt. I don't know any other verb that's so good. They're walking by. They know the rules. Everybody knows the rules when you walk through a street fair. Somebody's going to hawk something at you. That's how it works. Don't disappoint them. Hi, did you get one of the bags yet? Here you go. Here you go. Did you get the bag? look what my body's doing. Leaning into their space. Full elbow extension. Don't do this. If you keep your elbow next to, it's great for golf or tennis or I forget what it is with the shortened arm. But if you want to get those bags out, you extend your elbow, you move, you rock your body towards them. It's practice. It's an art form, not a science, okay? But you're going to lean towards, use your verbiage. Hello, here you go. Not would you like one, because that answer is no. Here you go. You know they need what you've got, so don't even ask. Is that rude? It's so un-Australian. Okay, it works. I don't care. Initiate the chat with, can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question? So what do you want to ask them? Your style, your vocabulary, your life intersecting theirs. What would you like to know about the lady with the dog, about the guy with the spiked hair? What do you want to know about the couple in the matching yoga suits? What do you want to know? I don't know what you want to know, but you want to know something about them, don't you? Straight away, because this will be Sunday. Did you get to go to church this morning? You might want to ask that. It's kind of I never start there, but you might want to. That might be a comfortable question for you. Did I see you at church this morning? Because I remember that spiked hair. I think you were, was it, you were in the third row next to the lady with the purple hair? Was it, I forget. I mean, don't be disingenuous, but have some fun because they know that you want to engage them. So engage them. Give it a go. Here you go. Did you get one of these bags yet? Can I tell you what's one thing that's inside there? Look, you can see. Oh, look, there are lots of things in there. I just want to show you one thing. Reach in, pull out one thing. Or just have it separately and say, I'd like to add this one thing to your bag, Menachem. this is about Jewish people. Last time I was out a couple years ago, I ran into three Jewish people and had decent chats with them, really decent long conversations, got the name and address of a couple of them. They were kind of surprised that I was working with the church. Aren't you Jewish? Yes. Well, and so was Jesus. And what do you think about Jesus? I mean, end of the day, that's the one question I want to get to. Who do you think Jesus is? That is the preeminent question from which all other conversations are going to be drawing. So if you can, practice this with one another. How do we get to who do you think Jesus is? It may not be anything except, excuse me, can I ask you a question? Sure. Who do you think Jesus is? Just right there. That's the blurt. It might be that one. If you're comfortable with that, and the more you practice it, the more you will. Don't answer unasked questions. Oh, that's just normal. Normal human conversation that I've never learned. But it's one of those things that I wish I could know. Don't answer. How do you disengage? How do you disengage from someone who's a time waster? Who's a lonely guy who walks by and would love to talk with you for the next 45 minutes. Now, Bob, why do you say he's a time waster? Because he's not listening to you. And he's lonely. It's nothing wrong with being lonely. I'm there. What he needs and what you can supply are two different things. So you have to know that and be not so enamored with the option of talking to a lonely guy. So what do? You have to disengage. How do you disengage from a conversation? Couple tricks. David, come on up here for a minute. Let me show you this trick. So you're the lonely guy. sorry. And you're there, and of course you're focused on me, so your feet are pointed right to me, and I'm trying to be like this. Note how body language tells a lot in your conversation. So he's there, and he's holding his shopping bags, and he's really keen to keep asking me. So I've already given him, one of the bags is my show bag. He's already gotten everything. I've already gotten his name and address, and Joe Lonely Guy. Okay, fine, I've got that. And I wrote it down, and I'm going to send you some more information about the church and the programs of the church. There's some in there, but we're going to send more. So what is he? He's just asking question after question. You tell me the story. I mean, remember that story you were telling me?
Oh, that was terrible.
No, you love the story. It's your story. So your story to me is about, and then, you know, stories like that never have periods. They just have commas. Mm. And then, I think it was like 1992, and then some friends, you know, from the neighborhood. I told you about Sylvia, you know. Mm. So you're telling me this story. Now, what do I do? How do I disengage? Let me show you. While you're looking at me, I suddenly look on your shoulder. Oh, I'm sorry. So you're talking, and I look, and I say, oh, no, wait, I thought there was something there. It's not there. Basically, distract, cut off his conversation. There are two ways to do it. One is to do this. One is the shoulder stare, which totally interrupts his train of thought, and you can then at that say, hey, Mr. Joe, it's been really nice to meet you. Thanks so much. I gotta get back. Boom, just like that. The other way to do that is to physically drop your pen. And he's still talking, and you come back talking. You come back up talking. So you physically drop... Oh, sorry. I just have to pick this up, and then I've got to get going back over here. So the way to disengage... I'm serious. You have to... Thanks, David. I know you find that bizarre, but I've done this for a couple years now. And if you don't physically disengage, you'll still be there a week from now with Joe Lonely Guy. And you've got to stop for his sake and for your talking to the next person. You've got to break it. Sometimes you can be in teams and, you know, you'll be out climbing over the dog, right? And handing out the thing, and this lonely guy talks to you, or lonely lady, that's not gender specific. And you're sharing, you're listening. You cannot interrupt. You feel rude because you're Anglican. I'm so sorry, and you're listening on and on, and you're Aussies on top of that. I'm a rude Jewish guy. I can do. You just don't know what to do. And so your partner comes up and says, hey, Bob, I need you to come back over here and do something. Just verbally interrupt. You can do that. That will work, too, in case the physical gesturing is a little too bizarre. I think I've covered these, but let me just finally give these final five. Give Jim a show bag. Okay, so everybody gets one. Everybody gets one. Number two, offer a question or two. Invite a question. Invite an answer. Listen carefully for the answer. Allow them to say it almost as long as required. Number three, pray with them. Number four, get his information for further contact. And five, don't pat his kids on the head. Just a final one. Don't pat kids on the head. Generally, that's rude. Not for most Aussies, but certainly Asians. Never pat a kid on the head. I don't know why I throw that in, but there you go. Questions you might have. I know I've answered everything you've ever wanted to know. Or comments. Or repulsions.
Bob, in terms of thinking about the English guy, so if somebody, as well as the lonely guy, there's also the belligerent guy, and sees the opportunity, this is my opportunity for what I really want, which is an argument.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And often it
So what do you do in the case of an argument? Generally speaking, you don't want to get engaged in too long of an argument. You don't want to look like you're afraid of the argument. So keep those two things in tension. I don't want to not have this chat. At the same time, this may not be the best place for that. So, Arthur, I really appreciate that you want to deal with this subject, because it sounds like you want to deal with this. Is that right? Just talk it back to him. And he'll say, well, of course, I'm not asking you about your prayer life, because I don't want to know. I want to know. How come you pray and God doesn't seem to listen? Okay, Arthur, that's a great question. One that I think warrants a great answer, and I want to give that to you. Can I send you a couple ideas that I'm mulling around in my head just now? Can we have this chat maybe tomorrow or next week? And you pull out your paper, and you pull out your pen, and you say, I'd like to get your details, and send you a real processed and thoughtful answer rather than a quick kind of ad hoc, almost debate conversation. So that shows respect for Arthur. At the same time, it gives you a chance to process it. Call David, call Darren, get some real answers, and send them a proper note. I think that's a respectful way. And if you can demonstrate respect for that guy, that's good. You are right that many people will finally see a religionist out there on the street and have a go at you because they're anti-theists. They're not just atheists. Give them time. Give them time to explode. Never interrupt an exploding bomb. Let it have its full impact. And then say, are you done? I've done that any number of times. That's okay. It's okay. You don't have to have an answer for them. Just let them express it. Remember, long-range impression of the church.
How do you approach that scenario?
Yeah, apathy. Who cares? sorry. Sorry. What do you do with Mr. Apathy? Yeah, that's a goodie. Would you like to come to one of our groups? No, not really. Would you like to have a show? Well, not really. They're not interested in very much. As soon as you hear the no, not really, kind of the apathetic guy, just ask him one question, and that is, excuse me, I'm sorry, what's your first name? Bill? Hello, Bill. My name's Marvin. Nice to meet you. Bill, let me ask, what gets you up on Monday morning? Does anything? Well, my wife, she makes me go to work. Okay, I know, and that's pretty cute, Bill. What I'm really asking is, and see, this is one of those things that I feel I can do, and you might feel is out of bounds for you. But I don't listen to pussyfooting kind of convo. When I'm out on the street, I really want to get to the rub. So I say, that's cute, Bill, but come on, I'm trying to be honest with you. What gets you up on Monday morning? And he'll say, well, you know, I got to go to my job. No, you don't. Why do you have to go to your job? So you just nail in on what matters to him. Why does he do what he does? If he's wearing anything, and I comment on people's clothing all the time. Oh, look, a crossword puzzle T-shirt. That's pretty fun. I like doing crossword puzzles. Which one is your favorite, Cryptic or New York Times? You know, just whatever it is. Talk about what they're wearing, not, I can't believe you're wearing jeans with holes in them. That's not what I mean. I mean, use that, which I really can't believe. You paid good money for that. Idiot, just wear mine, and in due course, they'll have holes. No, something about asking what matters to people. If they're wearing a Swans jumper or a ball cap that says Fitness First, how often do you go to Fitness First? Or is that, you know, whatever. Just ask a question that gets them talking with you as a human. First thing they notice is that you are a human intersecting with their day and they've got other things to do. And they're there with the grandkids, or they're there just, I don't even know why I'm walking down Longueville Road. This is, so, okay, oh, hello, yes, thank you for the, can I ask you, yes, sure, ask me a question. You're an annoyance to them. But a kindness and an annoyance don't go hand in hand. So be kind, and let's see what happens. Other questions? Sure.
So I have, you know, some people might say, this person that finds you an annoyance is, might fall into that same category. How do you draw the line between someone you could potentially get into it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why this is an art and not a science. Because when you're wearing the LCM green shirt and you're stepping onto the street now out of the box of our stall, and there you are. And they say, oh, no, thanks. Okay, I honor that choice. And I say, fine, I'll give it to an open-minded person, which annoys them. See, but I'm calling them on their non-open-mindedness. But I'm doing it in a loving and sensitive and kind way. Right, John? I'm very kind. Okay, so so I say, fine, I'll just give this to an open-minded person. Or anything like that, so that you're letting them know that you've had a moment of engagement, but that you respect their decision to be an idiot. Or, I'm sorry, to say no thank you to our good quality items. Does that make sense? Yeah. And the fourth time they come by, pretty soon they'll take the stupid thing, all right, because they're going to keep walking. They do that. They walk back and forth and back and forth. Where is that Indian place I was hunting? So they're looking for something, if not just a kill of 2 hours. Yeah. Oh, yeah. When you make balloons for children, do you ask them what they want? And do they ask for hot dogs? Or what do they ask for? Superman? Or so what do you... I mean, you could have... You can have fun with children, and they come up and you say, I think you look, can I make a mosquito for you? You know, I mean, whatever you want. And it doesn't even matter if it looks like one. You say, this is a mozzie. Oh, thanks. Because God really cares about you. And even though he and I have an argument about why he made mosquitoes, isn't it good that he made you? Feel free to talk about God while you're squeaking with the balloon. Or face painting, or arms, or whatever you're painting. Oh, your mom does that. You do painting. Oh, okay. But generally, when you're sketching a face, or you're face painting, or whatever, that's a moment. That's a real good moment of somebody really captive. You say, isn't it great? God is creative too, and painted the sunshine this morning, or the rain, or whatever he painted. Just add to the conversation with the stall. There you go. That's some conversation about the art of conversation. Okay.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, pleasure.